If Gort were standing back here and his visor were just about to come up and you saw a red glow, what would you say to him? Gort, if Gort were standing back here, well, see, this is the problem with dealing with you kids. You've missed the finer things in life. You've missed the essence of what true American culture is all about. If you don't, and I see some guy down here, this is another old fellow like me, knows the answer to this. Okay, what would you say? Well, close. Gort, klaatu, barata, nikto. Okay? Well, who was Gort? Gort was the robot in the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. Now, that's it. When we first saw that, I mean, today, you know, you've got the alien movies, the gruesome effects in the remake of The Thing, and you've got E.T. and so forth. But back then, The Day the Earth Stood Still was a pretty scary movie. And Gort was a pretty ominous robot. And so after the movie was over, I was 7 years old when I saw it. I was a little scared. I was kind of a feeble fellow back then. And so we remembered. I mean, all my life I've remembered Gort, klaatu, barata, nikto, just in case we were going to be invaded. UFOs and their theological significance. Is there any theological significance to UFOs? Well, I believe there is, and I want to look at that this morning. The first thing I want to do is kind of clear up some technical things about UFOs. First, what is a UFO? It's just simply an identified flying object. An unidentified flying object does not mean that it's an extraterrestrial. It's just a flying object that's unidentified. So if someone says, I saw a UFO, that doesn't mean that they saw an alien spaceship. They just saw something they couldn't identify. An extraterrestrial is something different. That would be something beyond the Earth. Extraterrestrial, beyond this globe. Then we need to deal with a couple of other things. For example, the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. There's kind of a chart of determining what the person actually saw. There's a DS, for example, which is a distant sighting, something that was seen. Jimmy Carter, for example, made the claim that I'm assuming you know who he is, but maybe I won't. If you don't know who Gort was, you may not know who Jimmy Carter was. Jimmy Carter was the peanut farmer who became president. He's from Georgia, 1976. He believed in UFOs. In fact, he says, I am convinced that UFOs exist because I have seen one. This is akin to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is the author of the Sherlock Holmes mysteries. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle believed in fairies, the little kind. He really believed, I mean, this is no joke, he wrote a book about it. Think of this. Here you have this super rational, logical character developed by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in Sherlock Holmes. I mean, there was a logical, rational explanation for everything in those novels. And then you've got Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of all that, who was a nutcase. I mean, this guy believed in fairies. He was good friends with Harry Houdini. And so Arthur Conan Doyle believed that Houdini was a true magician, that he performed true magic. And throughout his life, how Harry Houdini tried to convince Arthur Conan Doyle that everything he did was a trick. Which goes to show you, and this is what we'll see in all this, some of the most intelligent people in the world believe in UFOs and are, and in fact, will give their lives for them, for that belief. In fact, this was an article in the newspaper about the Hale Bopp Comet. Cult members said that they had life's answers, and these were extremely intelligent people. Who were, you know, maybe this is what computers do to you when you work on them too long, but these were computer specialists. But these people believed, and believed so much that they were willing to give their life for that belief. So belief in UFOs is out there from various strata of society. And there's a reason for this in our particular day and age. And so we have to understand some of the terminology here. A distant sighting. Then you have a CE1, CE2, CE3, CE4, CE5, CE6. A close encounter of the first kind. That's an observation of something unidentified in the sky. And that's what Jimmy Carter would say. I saw an unidentified flying object. That's a CE1, close encounter of the first kind. Then there's a CE2. Close encounter of the second kind. That is to see something close enough that it's almost identifiable, maybe 500 feet away. Then there's a CE3, which is a close encounter of the third kind. And there's a movie that came out, Close Encounter of the Third Kind. That's actually seeing an alien. CE4, an alleged abduction. There's lots of talks about that today, and there's, you know, the X-Files, and there are lots of CE4s there, and there are lots of CE3s, and here CE5s and CE6s. CE5, those who claim to be in personal contact with a UFO, and a CE6, injuries or deaths resulting from a UFO close encounter. So there's not only a science to this and a philosophy to this, but there is also terminology related to this. The whole UFO movement is moving from science fiction into what some people call true science. But it's, as I hope to demonstrate, more mythology and hopefulness than anything else. One of the ways to kind of look at the progress of UFOs and what they're all about is to look at popular culture. And again, popular culture tells you something about where people are coming from. What's probably the most famous alien novel? War of the Worlds. Okay, just someone said Contact. It just, you know, shows you that, you know, we're pretty provincial in our thinking. We tend to think in terms of what we've experienced. But War of the Worlds, written by H.G. Wells. And they made a movie of War of the Worlds in the 1950s, starring Gene Barry. Now, tell me something about War of the Worlds. Were they good aliens or bad aliens? They were bad aliens. And Independence Day is a very expensive ripoff of War of the Worlds. And that's really all it is. It's War of the Worlds with tremendous special effects. But keep in mind something about War of the Worlds and Independence Day. The aliens were bad guys. They destroyed things. They destroyed people. They were not our friends. And that's a tremendously important thing. Now I want you to notice something also in the shift of worldviews and all this. If you watch the movie War of the Worlds, how do the aliens die? Yeah, there was just they couldn't adapt to Earth's diseases and bacteria and so forth, and they collapsed. Where were the people when all this took place? They were in church. It's interesting to see the end of that movie, to see that they had tried everything. Atomic bombs, the biggest and the baddest of all the weaponry that the world could put up against these aliens, and nothing worked. Nothing put a dent in it, in any of the aliens. And finally, in desperation, you find these people in church. When the aliens are just about to attack the city, and all of a sudden they just started, the alien spacecraft just started to crash. And it's interesting, it ends on a biblical note, that God had, it was the little things that got into these aliens and killed them. And in essence, they give credit to God for this at the end of this movie. Now, Independence Day, which is simply War of the Worlds with special effects, how does it end? Who defeats the aliens? Man and his technology does it. Here you start seeing the shift in worldviews. You have the negative aliens. God takes care of those. You have negative aliens, and man takes care of those. Shift in worldview. And there has been this preoccupation with aliens throughout history. For example, The Day the Earth Stood Still, which we talked about. We're going to talk more about that movie because it's very, very interesting. The Thing, which was remade a number of years ago by John Carpenter. Here's a trivia question for some of the older people. Who played The Thing in the movie The Thing? James Arness. If anybody's ever seen Gunsmoke, James Arness played Matt Dillon. He was The Thing. And this is another bad alien movie. Of course, H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, which came out in 1953. This Island Earth is another one. The Blob. Who made his acting debut in The Blob? Who's ever seen The Great Escape? The guy on the motorcycle, Steve McQueen. He was in The Blob. The Village of the Damned, a truly eerie movie. They remade it, and it's a terrible one. You want to watch a truly eerie movie, watch the 1960 version of Village of the Damned. All of a sudden, the whole town goes blank. Women, all the women in the town from 18 years old to 60 years old are pregnant. They all give birth at the same time to the same kind of, blonde-haired, blue-eyed kids, and the kids grow up extremely fast and are about to take over the whole town and, I guess, in essence, take over the entire world until the final scene, which I won't tell you. Andromeda Strain, 1971, of course, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and E.T. Now, with Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., what shift do you see in the way aliens are portrayed? They're good guys, aren't they? They're here to do what? Save us. And we're going to see that this becomes a recurring theme today, and man's, again, trying to get out of that trap. This is a way of transcendence. We're going to look beyond the stars. And one of my favorites, I like the 56 version better than the 78 version, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That's one of the pod movies. And of course, Superman, Cocoon, and then there was television. And of course, you had The Adventures of Superman when I was growing up, some of the Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, do not adjust your set. Don't try to control the audio or the video. That's they came on, and you were in the outer limits. One of my personal favorites, my favorite Martian, starring Bill Bixby. Bill Bixby went on to bigger things. He played, I think it was Bruce Bannister in The Hulk. He was the weakling side of The Hulk. Then, of course, Star Trek, Mork and Mindy, Buck Rogers, Alien Nation, and a show that I really did enjoy because I think it got to the essence of what some people are describing aliens today, and that was the miniseries V. In fact, I was watching the Sci-Fi Channel just when I got here the first day, and they had one of the V segments. How many of you ever seen V? Now, this is it's interesting because it's the good guy, bad guy, deception version of UFOs. When these aliens come down here, they come down as good guys. But what's just under the skin, literally? Yeah, what kind of monsters are they? Reptiles. And what they're coming to do is, first of all, they're taking all the water off the planet, and they're taking all the people off the planet, and they're going to breed them on their planet because, of course, they eat us. But They hide their appearance. In essence, they're kind of angels of light. They come down here as good guys, but under the surface, they are in fact truly evil. And so, in kind of putting all this together, we've got two different kinds of alien encounters. That is, you've got the good aliens, the ETs, and the close encounters of the third kind, and then you've got the bad guys over here. The Thing, War of the Worlds, etc. These two ideas operate in our society today concerning aliens. And this is something that we need to really think about when we talk about what aliens are all about and what the UFOs are all about and do they even exist. I've kind of charted for you various views of UFOs. There's the secular view. What makes aliens and UFOs possible within the secular worldview? What does? You said it. Evolution does. Why? If life, look, probability says that there's, they say anyway, if there's a planet like ours in this solar system and there are literally billions and billions of solar systems, what is the probability is that there are other people out there like us? And so what have the secularists done in order to try to bolster that view? They sent space probes up. Pioneer was one of them, and they took a golden disc. I don't know if you've seen this. This shows you the secularists are as believing as we are in terms of their religion. They have true faith that there's somebody out there. Of course, we've been telling them that all the time, that there's somebody out there, but they don't want to listen to it. They want to be able to control what's out there. And so what they did is they took a gold disc. They etched within that gold disc a representative male, a representative female, gave a depiction of what we looked like. They etched on there a certain mathematical formula. They put our solar system in there, giving some indication as to where we are located in the universe. And they sent this thing out there, hoping that some alien people would, in fact, find this deal and then want to contact us. That's true. I mean, I didn't make this thing up. And we spent good money on this. I mean, your tax dollars or your parents' tax dollars went to pay for this thing. And they are truly hoping that there's somebody out there. So the secular version is that evolution makes it all possible. And it is an attempt to find meaning for life. These guys, remember, they've trapped themselves. They've trapped themselves in a secular world. They can't get out of that sect. They build in within them. They find meaning for themselves, and so they're looking beyond themselves and up to the stars in order to find some way for this. Carl Sagan, who was a popularizer of evolution and astronomy and so forth, did a video series years ago called Cosmos. He also wrote a book called Cosmos, and the opening line in the Cosmos book is this: the universe is all there is, ever was, or ever will be. What has he done? He's trapped himself. But this is the same Carl Sagan who wrote a book called Contact, which was turned into a movie. And what's the movie all about? Contact. You know, I want to be in contact with something greater than I am. It's something out there that will give meaning to my life. And maybe there is some alien culture out there who can tell me what I'm all about. And this is Carl, some people call him Carl Pagan. Carl Sagan says the universe is all there is, there ever was, or ever will be. Traps himself. I can't live like that. There's got to be something beyond the stars. Looking for something to come in. And, you know, Carl Sagan is dead now, and he has made contact. Now, there's a New Age version of aliens and UFOs. These are real titles of books. God Drives a Flying Saucer. The Bible and Flying Saucers, Spaceships of Ezekiel. Now think of it. Now, if you come with an alien presuppositional grid, and you take that alien UFO presuppositional grid and put it on the Bible, and you're a New Ager who believes that the pyramids were built by architectural plans given to the Egyptians by aliens, and you believe that the Mayan, Inca, and Aztec cultures were also built by architectural designs given by aliens, and that these huge rock engravings, I mean, they cover acres and acres, were landing sites for aliens, so aliens could find their way and land. Now, if you come to the Bible with that presuppositional model, guess what you're going to try, what you're going to find in the Bible? You're going to look at passages of Scripture, and you're going to say, that has got to be a UFO. And Jesus had to be a space alien. And they mistreated him. But he got back at them. You know, look, the E.T. thing. What happens to E.T.? He dies. And what happens? He's resurrected. And then what's happened? Who comes back to get him? The mothership comes and takes him off the earth. Okay, so now you've got Jesus. He's mistreated. Mistreated by all the officials. He dies. He's raised from the dead. And in Acts chapter 1, what happens? The disciples, you know, pre-scientific mind, the disciples see a cloud come down. Well, that's obviously, it's either a purposeful cover from the alien spaceship that Jesus is being taken up into, or it's exhaust from the spaceship. And of course, the disciples come back. Now, I could be a great UFOlogist. I mean, this stuff is so easy to make up. So Jesus was actually, I mean, a being takes Jesus up into the spaceship, and he says, "I'll come back." You know. And the disciples, and they're pre-scientific, and they have no conception of UFOs, write this idea. It's fantastic. Jesus is God. And he came and he was taken up and so forth. He's going to come back again. But in all reality, they're all up there in their spaceship laughing and saying, you know, they thought I was God. I'm really this alien. Now, if you think I'm making this up in terms of what these New Agers believe, that's in fact what they believe. Jesus was, in fact, an alien. Then you go back to the Old Testament, you know, all kinds of alien stuff there. You know, Ezekiel's wheels within the wheels. Ezekiel didn't have any idea of celestial mechanics and the way spaceships work and so forth. And when he saw this spaceship come down here, that's the way he described it, wheels within a wheel. And when I have an artist's rendition by a guy who believes that that's what it was, a depiction of Ezekiel's wheels within the wheels. It was actually a spaceship. So the New Age variety of alien encounters tries to put the Bible together with their renditions of what this is all about. And I had a picture here of, I can't find it. But now another one is, this is all a hoax. Hugh Ross, who's an astrophysicist and minister, believes in UFOs, but he asserts that 98% of UFO sightings are really not that. He says that there are 2% of things that are unexplained. Now, I fall more into the hoax, wishful thinking mentality, that these things out there they really don't exist. And then there are a variety of Christian views of UFOs, and probably the most popular version of that is that aliens are demons. It's that miniseries V, that these aliens are really demons in disguise. And this is tied to a contemporary view of eschatology, which we're going to talk about in the next session. That we're living in the last days. And because we're living in the last days, as Jesus is coming back soon, guess what? There's going to be all kinds of demonic deception. And so what people are really seeing as alien encounters are really demons who are coming down here and getting ready and setting the stage for a end time battle. Now, there's also a view within Christendom, which we'll talk about a little bit. It's called the rapture, the pre-tribulational rapture. Now, in the pre-tribulational rapture, Christians will be taken off the earth in an instant, in the twinkling of an eye. And what Christians who believe that aliens are actually demons believe about this is that our absence will be explained away as an alien abduction, and that we were the bad people. This is, of course, we'll all be gone, so we won't know anything about this, but this is what their deal is. We're all gone because we weren't the good people. We didn't really believe in UFOs, and so they took all of us off the earth. And that's how we will be explained away when this so-called rapture takes place. Now, this is serious theology for people. And I have a growing stack of books in my library on aliens as demons. And it has become the most popular view, and you're going to be hearing more and more of it. And that the deception, that the Antichrist, now this is Hal Lindsey's view, that the Antichrist is actually going to be an alien. That a spaceship will land, and this guy will get off, and the world will in fact honor this guy and almost worship him, because we are setting the stage for it. And I'll give you an example of the mindset of this. Remember when Princess Diana died, and all this adulation that took place, and now they have a museum for her. And this one man wrote, says, "Look how easily the world was deceived with Diana, and how they were just taken away with her. And even the name Diana is the name of a goddess." That's a book, I believe the book of Acts talks about. And you see, look how easily the world was taken in by this woman. Just think if an alien were to come down here and describe himself as some god, how easily people would be taken in by him. And this is the mentality for this. And what's happening is that there are literally millions of Christians out there who are being primed for this kind of UFO eschatological position. It's a new nuance that has been added to the mix of theology in our culture today, and it's a shame that this is happening. And it sounds so viable to believe. But when you start talking about eschatology, it's really easy to convince people of strange, strange stuff. I talk to them on the radio all the time. They believe the weirdest things. Now, UFOs as saviors. And here I want to look at the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. Those of you who aren't familiar with it, apparently most of you are, a spaceship lands in Washington, D.C. on a baseball field, right in the heart of America, right in our capital. And this alien comes off, played by Michael Rennie, and his name is Klaatu. And he's coming down here to tell us if we on Earth don't get our collective acts together, that they're basically going to blow us up. And he brought this Gort, this robot, with him to demonstrate. And they have allowed this robot to police them. They do any evil thing, and what happens is Gort just zaps them. So Klaatu is shot because he pulls out this communicating device. Someone thought it was a weapon. One of the soldiers shoots him, so he's wounded. He's taken to Walter Reed Hospital, which is the Army hospital where he's taken care of. He's healed almost immediately because of some salve he put on it and so forth. So he decides to take on a new identity, to get among the people, to try to learn more about us humans. And so you see him walking down. Well, you see him walking down the street. He's got a suit of clothes on and so forth, and he has a suitcase in his hand. And there's a name written on the suitcase, and it's not Samsonite. And the name on the suitcase is Carpenter. So he takes the name of Mr. Carpenter. Now, why Carpenter? Jesus was a carpenter. Get it? So they went back and they talked to the director and producer of this show, and that was exactly the impression he wanted to convey. That Klaatu takes on the identity of Jesus the Messiah. He becomes a savior for the people. And he goes among the people and so forth, and he's hounded by the officials, just like Jesus was hounded by the officials. They pursue him, and at the end, what do? They kill him. Of course, Patricia O'Neill goes, and she's got to let Gort know that something happened, and so she goes and gets Gort, and Gort takes Klaatu and takes him into into the spaceship and raises him from the dead. I mean, just again, all of the features of what a Messiah would be like. He comes down here offering a way to save the planet. They chase him, they hunt him down, they kill him. He was raised from the dead again, and then of course where does he go? He takes off in the spaceship and he goes back to his planet. It is this idea of salvation that has captured the secular mind. And so you've got a couple of things going. You've got the Christians over here who do not see aliens as saviors. They've seen them as a tremendous menace, as the Antichrist, as a prelude to the end of the world. Then you have the secularists over here who have given up all hope of trying to change anything, who see aliens as a way to save the world, to break out, if you will, to break out of this trap that they set for themselves, to find some meaning and some transcendence, to give some meaning to their lives. And that's the essence of what the UFOs are today. And you're going to see more and more of this take place in our culture. The biggest problem that people have today in dealing with the whole UFO things, what are scientists fighting against in dealing with UFOs and the possibility of aliens? What is the biggest problem they face? That what? That they'll be bad? If you're a scientist, if you know anything about science and physics and so forth, what's the problem of trying to come up that there could be aliens? Distance. H.G. Wells, where were H.G. Wells aliens from? They were from Mars. I mean, how convenient. Okay? But how fast does light travel? 186,000 miles per second. Takes light takes light 9 minutes to get from the sun to the earth. What's the closest star? Alpha Centauri, which is how far away? 4.6 light years. That means you'd have to travel the speed of light and still take you 4.5 years. And so scientists have given up on the idea that anybody is going to come here in terms of what we know about physics and space travel. They say it's impossible. So they're in a real dilemma, and they know they're in a dilemma, but they still want to believe so much. And so they've come up with a new theory, and that is kind of dimensional travel. And we've got a few minutes left here. I'll try to explain how this works. You did remember this. Got it. Write it down. You never know when Gord might show up. They've come up with a new theory. What was the name of I think in Star Trek, I'm not a real Star Trek aficionado, but what was the drive that was used? Warp drive. Why warp drive? They talked about complicated guys that space is warped. It has like folds in it, and as a result, you can travel through space in terms of these warps and these folds. Instead of space being linear, how far you'd have to travel, you could travel from one fold to the next in terms of this warp drive. Now, they never explained how it worked, but it's just a theory. And so scientists are always coming up with ways to try to solve their religious dilemmas. They said, we've got to come up with these new theories. And so they've come up with the idea that the space travel is dimensional. And they've portrayed it like this. We live in a three-dimensional universe. But there could be other dimensions out there. Have you ever seen the movie The Time Machine? They talked about the fourth dimension, the dimension of time. If you've ever seen the movie, he puts the character George puts his model time travel machine down, and he does it in front of everybody, and he takes a cigar and he bends the cigar like a person. He sits it into it and puts the lever forward. Now, what happens to the machine? It vanishes. But did it really? It's still there, occupying the same space, but it's traveling in a different dimension into the future. But it's still occupying the same space. And Sebastian Cabot, who was in the, he was just, oh, this is crazy. You know, it's gone. It's disappearing. It's a trick and so forth. But it's the idea of dimensional travel. And so this is what someone has set forth, that aliens actually travel interdimensionally. And the reason we can't see them, and we only see bits and pieces of them, is because we're of a different dimension. And consider this. If we're a two-dimensional creature, we could only see a ball as a slice of a ball. If this ball passes through there, you only see, it's like a CAT scan, you only see one slice at a time. You don't see the whole ball passing through. Flatland, exactly. There's a novel, 19th century novel called Flatland by, I believe the guy's name was Abbott. And he describes this kind of world. It's an intriguing book. And this is what some ufologists are claiming today, that the reason we're not seeing aliens in like us, and we're only seeing the bits and pieces of them, a bit of space junk that kind of passes through, bright lights and so forth, is because their travel is dimensional, interdimensional travel. And as it passes through, you only see, if I were to take you and just put you through this two-dimensional deal, a CAT scan, I couldn't recognize who you were. I would only see you one slice at a time. And because these guys are passing through our dimension so quickly, we can't make heads or tails. And that's why they're saying, well, a jet fighter will be up there and he'll be flying along, and all of a sudden he sees this brilliant flash of light and this strange, almost impossible maneuver. And they're trying to explain it as this. And so this is a new theory as to how they can get around the physics and the time travel because of the distance. And this is something that's being propounded. Now, of course, what do the Christians say? Hey, angels, angels appeared and disappeared on the spot. That there is kind of an interdimensional aspect to the life of Christ. All of a sudden it says that Jesus appeared in their midst. Angels just appeared. The angel Gabriel appeared to Mary. And see how Christians now are taking this and saying how these could be demons. Demons just appear just like aliens appear. You can get rid of the distance factor. And so in order to keep up with the whole the alien stuff, you need to listen to Mark Bell, who's on the radio. What's his name? Art Bell. He has a lot of crazy people on there regarding all this stuff. But this kind of gives you an idea of where we are in all this. But the true feature of UFOs and aliens among the secularists is they've got to try to find meaning in their life. They've given up God. their evolution and the evolutionary worldview has failed, and that hasn't given them any meaning. So they're looking beyond the stars to find something. And they have these huge listening dishes out there, listening for anything out there that'll tell them that there is an explanation for who they are. And they're wrapping all of this in science. They're saying this is scientifically possible, this is scientifically feasible, and we're not alone in the universe. And what gives it all possibility is the evolutionary theory. If we've evolved over time, maybe someone else has evolved too. And so you need to be aware of these ideas. And there are a couple of, from a Christian perspective, there aren't a lot of good books on this because they take the demon approach, which I do not take. My eschatology and what I see in the Bible really does not lend itself to that. But this is a helpful little book. It's called The Facts on UFOs and Other Supernatural Phenomena. Answers to the Most Asked Questions by John Ankerberg and John Weldon. Usually the first parts of books about aliens are pretty good by Christians, except then when you get to the second part of the book when they get off into their crazy eschatology. And we'll talk about that in the next lecture. So watch the kind of books that you read on this, and keep in mind that there's some good material in them, but not necessarily being all good material. I've written a couple of articles on this. If you are interested, a lot of the stuff that I've talked about are in these articles. These are two issues of the Biblical Worldview, which deal with this whole alien idea and the idea of saviorhood by secularists. If you want these, you can write to American Vision, and I will send you copies of them. It gives you the footnotes where you can look up some of these things as well. We've got about... We've got 10 minutes. Any questions about this? I know we're going to have a question and answer session, but I may have to depart a little early from that. So if you have any questions about this now that we can... Yes?
What do you think of Dr. North's book, Unholy Spirit?
The question is, what do I think of Dr. North's book, Unholy Spirit? Unholy Spirit is an expanded version of a book he did back in 1976 called None Dare Call It Witchcraft. I tend to discount a lot of the things that Dr. North maintains happened. I'm pretty much in the Harry Houdini camp in that regard, in the James Randi camp, and there's another fellow, Dan Corum, who's a magician and who also does a lot of debunking of all these things, like psychic surgery. Gary has a chapter in there on psychic surgery, and Gary believes that psychic surgery truly takes place. I believe psychic surgery is a fraud, and I could do psychic surgery right now on almost anybody in here. And if I had a believable, the audience really wanted to believe this, I could probably demonstrate to them that I actually did psychic surgery on somebody. I would pull one of you from the audience, and I would put you up here, and of course you have to do this ahead of time, and you get a little bag with, say, gizzards and a little bit of blood in it and so forth, and you hold it in the palm of your hand. It's a little bit of sleight of hand. This is what, in fact, Jim Jones, remember the Jonestown Massacre, took place in the 70s, where 900 people killed themselves, took cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, and just drank it and died. Jim Jones got these people to believe that he had magical powers by performing a couple of these so-called miracles. The psychic surgery was one of them. He even demonstrated he could raise people from the dead. Of course, this was all planned ahead of time. So you bring somebody up here and you put them on the table and you try to get somebody who has a little flesh to them so you can kind of hide what you're doing. And then you have this little bag of guts and gizzards and body parts and so forth, and you tell people what I'm going to do is I'm going to insert my hand into this person's abdomen, and I'm going to go in there. I'm going to feel for those tumors, and I'm going to pull them out. And there'll be some blood, you see, but this is a psychic surgery, and you will see. And after when the whole thing is over with, there won't be an incision or anything. So they bring the guy up, you put him down on the table. It's a little sleight of hand. You got this little bag of gizzards and guts in it that is easily broken, and you get somebody with a little bit of flesh to them, and you take your hand like this, and you look like you're going to jam it into the folds of the skin. But what you're actually doing is, as you go into that skin, when that person has a little meat on him, you bend your fingers. Okay? And of course it looks like boy, that hand is going all in there. Well, of course, as you're doing that, you're breaking that little bag, and what happens? Blood starts coming up. And then the hand's down there like this, and you're doing this, and the guy's down there, and he doesn't know what's going on, and so forth. And all of a sudden, you pull out a little string of this and a little string of that, and there's a little gizzard over here, and so forth and so on. And it's all done, and you take it, and you wipe it clean, and there's no incision. Real slick. Now, if you're a magician, and, you know, a magician spots that stuff, do you ever see the Amazing Jonathan, I think he is, a comedian, does some unbelievable stuff, a little risque in some cases. But he takes a knife, a butcher knife, big knife, and he puts it into his arm, like this, like he's cutting his arm in half. Well, he's not doing that, it's all fake. See, a true magician looks at that and says, look, I can duplicate that all the time. So that's a long answer to a short question. Again, I think that there are lots of things in there that are, there's some things that are unexplainable, like spontaneous human combustion, where people just go up in flames. And this is documented, and they'll find maybe a foot less than a shoe. And the room itself is not burned. The chair that they're sitting in, isn't burned. All there is a greasy soot left behind. And there might be a hat or a hand or, and so forth and so on. Now, those kinds of things are difficult to explain, although some people have tried to explain them. You know, for example, people are typically overweight. They consume great amounts of alcohol. And what happens is that they're smokers and they fall asleep and cigarette falls on them, and it's like a candle, and the fat just starts melting away, and the whole body just, that's one explanation for it. It doesn't explain, however, how they could happen on the dance floor. When a woman was on a dance floor, she just went up in flames, and she was just, nothing, there wasn't anything they could do about it. Some of you are laughing, it's not funny. If that were your wife going up in flames right in front of you, you wouldn't, and the eerie thing about all of it is, the house doesn't go up in flames, the chair doesn't go up in flames, it's just that person, to the bones. And the bones go up too, and the amount of heat that you need in order to burn bone is tremendous, and it has to be sustained for a pretty long period of time. So those kinds of things are difficult to explain. But I enjoyed Gary's book. There's a lot of good stuff in it. I'm a little skeptical of claims of the supernatural by occultic means. And a good antidote to that would be books by Dan Corum, who makes his living exposing those kinds of things. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, again, the question is, what about the mass of evidence that we're getting about all this? Well, again, I'm not denying that there aren't unidentified flying objects, but they're unidentified. So there could be a tremendous amount of information coming into us about things that we don't know anything about. The real question is, how much of that stuff is really extraterrestrial? And this Hugh Ross says, look, and going through it all, look, I don't trust our government that much either. I mean, come on, and are they hiding things and so forth and so on? I don't know. But at the same time, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. I don't think everything that happens out there is a conspiracy. And I think we need to be careful. The black helicopters and so forth. And we tend to want to believe things that are unexplainable. We live in a culture where We want to know what the future is. We want to know the hidden things. The Bible even warns against that. The secret things, God said, the secret things belong to me. Don't worry about those things. Pay attention to things that I've given you. So I'm not sure how much of that so-called evidence is really significant. How much of it have you seen yourself? Yeah. I know they're saying it's. Well, I'm convinced. Look, I've met a lot of people who I think have been abducted. I don't want to make light of it because there are people out there who really do, in fact, believe a lot of this stuff. And just because people say there's evidence and there's proof and so forth, that doesn't do a whole lot to convince me. In order for me to be convinced, I'm like Thomas. I want to put my fingers in there. And so until I see it, I don't think I'd be that convinced if I actually Dan Corum told me he could come into this group and he could convince a good number of you that he was in fact an alien. He could do it. He has done it. He has sat down with people at the table in a restaurant where he goes in, he has experimented, and he has left there with those people thinking he was an alien. Then he had to get up and go to the guy and just tell him he was just a magician. He was able to do things that convinced them. So people are gullible. People want to believe. Yeah.
Bunch of lights, and somewhat of a silhouette of a flying beast that was estimated to be about 3 miles long.
Yeah.
And it performed a maneuver that was completely impossible all across the city, and then it took off. And people who never believed in UFOs said, aha, maybe there is something to this.
Yeah, have you ever seen the movie? I don't want to say I'm preoccupied with movies, but My Cousin Vinny. Ever seen My Cousin Vinny? Oh, I get an applause for a movie. Not The Day the Earth Stood Still in Gort, but My Cousin Vinny. At least he was an Italian. Remember in there where Vinny's cousin, who was in jail for murder, said, Vinny, you don't understand, Vinny. He said, I don't know how that works right now, but give me enough time and I'll figure it out. He's got it behind his back, or he's doing this or that, or he put it in his hand and so forth. You give people enough time, and there may be a good explanation for that. But my point in all this is, I only got a couple minutes. My point is, if you come with an already developed presuppositional model to say, I believe in these kinds of things, that evidence now is accepted. And then the evidence now becomes in to support the presuppositional model. I stand back and I'm a bit more skeptical than that. I'm looking at things a little differently. I said, wait a minute, maybe there's a better explanation for this. Maybe I don't have enough of the facts. I'm listening to a report of all this. I didn't see it, and so what if I saw it? There's lots of things I see I don't understand. And so we need to be very discerning and very careful in the way that we evaluate evidence, so-called evidence out there. Because we've just seen too many things people offer evidence. Remember cold fusion? Big deal about cold fusion a couple of years ago. Well, it turned out to be a bust because it could not be replicated again in the laboratory. So last question, yes.
Salvation and different things, which is contrary to truth,
And the commonality of these kinds of things, and if, you know, light is the thing being shown, is it not possible that there could be demonic influence with these people that are, you know, ungodly and under the dominion?
Yeah, I don't have problems with demonic influences. I think we give too much credit to the devil. You know, C.S. Lewis had a good line. He said, you know, there are two equal and opposite errors: to give too much power to the devils, and at the same time to deny their existence altogether. And the devil is happy with either one of those. And so we need to be careful. Since we live in a day of heightened eschatological expectations, I tend to be one who says, look, let's just take a different approach to this and once again evaluate our presuppositional grid that we're using to evaluate. We've got to close. Thank you.